How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, Tuesday, August 17th, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com, here to talk a lot of news. Raw from this past Monday night, Raw for next Monday night, in fact, and we'll talk some other news as well from pro wrestling and MMA. And Dave, how you doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
Well, I told you this, but not everybody else knows, so I'll just tell you right now. In the 15 years that I've been doing this newsletter and everything else we've done here online, I've never gotten a bad computer virus, and I got one Monday. And I wasn't downloading porn or trying to download some sort of illegal software or anything like that. I swear to you, I was reading an article about Linda McMahon when my computer just went nuts, and I thought, what an irony that after all these years, that's what almost killed my computer. But got it cleaned up, so now I'm petrified to click on any links that have anything to do with Linda McMahon, and I'm actually kind of fine with that. So anyway, that was my tragedy for today. But that brings us to Raw. Not a tragedy, but as far as the booking of Nexus, it was like they lost the match last night, and then on Monday night, they decided that they were going to give almost all of them a win in singles matches, but they totally half-assed it for most of them. There were run-ins, there were count-outs. It was like they knew that these guys had to get some wins, but the wins, I won't say all of them, because, I mean, Wade Barrett beat Jericho clean, and obviously, you know, Cena won his match, but well, actually, that one.
Yeah, but that's on the other side.
That's on the other side. But no, there were countouts.
Skip Sheffield got to pin John Morrison.
Yeah, Skip Sheffield did pin Morrison. But in general, it was just like, you know, it's like, I think that if they ever do an invasion angle right, it'll be like 2080, where after.
Well, it won't be Vince.
Well, yeah, after another 70 years.
I don't even think it'll be Stephanie. There won't even be a WWE. It's going to be when, like, you know, some new company takes over.
Well, it's very obvious if you watch this as compared to the WCW invasion. They learned, like, a little something, but they're still scared shitless to put these guys over.
Well, I think that part of it is that they don't want to put... It's not. I don't think they're afraid to put these guys over. I think they're afraid to put the other guys under because the other guys are big stars. And they're, you know, it's like, realistically, it's like... You know, right now, Randy Orton shouldn't exactly lose a clean match to Justin Gabriel. That would be pretty stupid. Because, you know, Randy Orton's, aside from being really over, Randy Orton's going to be headlining the next pay-per-view. And a lot of pay-per-views to come, and Justin Gabriel's probably not going to be headlining too many pay-per-views. So I think that they were afraid, you know, that in the long run that Heath Slater's not going to be nearly as valuable as Edge. And, you know, that's, you know, so they come up with, okay, so now that we've established that, now how do we get their hands raised? And it's like, well, the only way to do that is to have them win by count out. Unfortunately, that was twice in a row. But both those matches ended the same way, or very similarly.
Yeah.
So it made for it started out okay. The show started out okay. It kind of, to me, in the middle, was kind of predictable in a bad way as opposed to in a good way. And, you know, it was just at the end, I don't know. I don't think it was one of the better Raws. It's 5 weeks before the pay-per-view. We got a six-way main event. Being that, you know, the four-way was so good, we'll do a six-way. And that's pretty much the only match, I think, that they kind of made clear as far as the direction that they're going.
I will disagree somewhat as far as it starting out all right. The first match of the series was all right, but the very first segment was Nexus coming out and talking about how they lost, but that which does not kill you makes you stronger. And Wade's there trying to talk about how they're going to continue to run roughshod over Raw. It's not all over. And then out comes John Cena, and he proceeds to mock and bury every single one of them one by one. And he pointed out that they lost, that Wade Barrett tapped out, that they failed, that they talked tough but couldn't back it up. And sitting here thinking, you know, it's one thing to do promos like this on, you know, as we've said before, top stars, but these guys were, you know, everything John Cena said was true. They talked big.
Well, the guy's like a male escort, and the other guy's a stripper, and the other guy's gay.
Well, not necessarily all that stuff, but you know.
Some of that stuff,
well, he did
true.
Bury them all, and you know.
Okay, I have to say one thing. When he started doing that comedy at the very beginning, I thought, oh God, this is like, you know, that usual WWE comedy. But for some reason, I thought that his ripping on those guys was really funny, and his delivery was really good. And even though, yeah, it probably in the middle of like your main event angle and all that, you know, probably isn't the greatest idea in the world. I just thought it was really funny. And the other thing is just that, you know, as far as like Nexus, you know, being like top draws on top and everything like that, I think that they've already screwed it up anyway. So why not let them tell jokes?
It would have been fine if he would have buried them, and then they would have gone out and beat everybody clean. You know what I mean? So at least they got buried, but then they went out there and they kicked some ass. Instead,
some of them kicked ass.
Well, two or a couple of them maybe, but
three.
I don't know. It just.
Well,
I mean, I
like when Cena came in there and just goes, Daniel Bryan beat half of you all by himself, and it's like, God damn, those are great percentages. 2 out of 7 becomes half. There was actually so many funny things in that first promo.
He called Heath Slater the girl from Wendy's. He called
Gabriel
gay, which actually was kind of ironic given who Gabriel is dating, and buried some other people here. And anyway, they ended up the GM.
You didn't tell me who he was dating.
What was that?
You didn't tell me who he was dating.
I'll tell you off the air. I might get in trouble. I try and get in trouble if I say it right now. But
Cena said it on the said it in front of 5 million people. You're gonna get in trouble. I'm just teasing.
Well, Cena said that he was gay, so I'm telling you
he
all
said
he's
he
not.
An alternative lifestyle, and then he said he would on another show that wasn't PG. He would explain what he really meant.
Actually, it was funny when he was mentioning alternative lifestyle, and it was like nobody in the building made any reaction whatsoever, and the joke just completely died, and he tried to save it with more comedy, which actually made the whole thing... That actually made it funny, when he told the joke that bombed and tried to save it.
It was just like, the whole thing was just tremendously bizarre. I mean, the thing with where he was making fun of Michael Tarver, I just thought that was just hilarious.
Well, it's Michael Tarver, of all people.
I was surprised that I figured, you know, like, one of those guys was getting kicked out, and I thought it was going to be... You know, Michael Tarver, not Darren Young. But
really? I would have guessed Darren Young in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, I would have guessed. I don't know. I mean, Darren Young's probably the right one because he's also the one that, you know, they allowed Cena to destroy, you know, a couple weeks ago. But I don't know. I just thought that...
He's been treated as the biggest geek by far.
He's been treated as the biggest geek. I just thought that, like, that Daniel Bryan, since he was wrestling Michael Tarver, that Daniel Bryan would actually get to win tonight. So,
seriously, come on.
Yeah, I really did. I really believed that he would get to win. I knew that, you know, I figured that there was going to be like a 5-2 or 6-1 sweep. Obviously, Cena wasn't going to lose. But the thing is like, if Cena wasn't going to lose tonight, and everyone else was going to lose, then why did Cena win last night if he wasn't going to lose tonight?
Mysterious questions here. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
But the GM, actually, first Cena basically signed the 7-on-7 series, and then a little later, the GM dinged, and they confirmed the 7-on-7 series, and talked about how nobody was allowed to run in, or there would be harsh consequences, and Barrett basically said that anybody that fails tonight is going to be kicked out of the group, and then we had Otunga grabbing the mic and saying that, well, that goes for you too. If you lose, we're booting you out of the group, and we'll get a new leader. So, anyway, it was announced that it was going to be Jericho versus Barrett first, and they had an acceptable match. Barrett looked really green here, and he was in there with Chris Jericho, of all people, which is really saying something. And they did some stuff back and forth. Jericho went for the code breaker. Barrett hoisted him up and hit his move for the pin. So he got a clean victory over Chris Jericho. That was at least good, but this was like... The chicken's coming home to roost as far as these guys not doing singles matches for the last 3 months now, because all these guys doing singles matches on one show, I don't want to say they were all completely exposed, but it was very clear how green they all were still. And there you go. So we had the guys from Going the Distance coming out, and they were annoying, called out the Hart Dynasty. The GM dinged and said, from now on, the unified tag titles will now be known as the WWE Tag Team Championships. I don't know why.
Why not?
Well, why did they unify them? Why didn't they just do a match and send half the belts back to SmackDown? It's like they unified them and then they're just not unified anymore. There's only one set of belts.
It's the same thing. They still work both shows.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure that they still work both shows. I think the only difference is that they have two belts instead of four.
I see. They did get new belts. Japanese-style belts, actually. And that was that. So then Wade appeared on the big screen and said that Nexus had chosen Gabriel as the opponent for Bret Hart because Bret had presented the belts to the Harts. And that was that. We had Tarver and Daniel Bryan. Tarver did not look good. His punches actually were the worst, which is funny since for a while, like a week, he had a gimmick where his finish was a punch. And Daniel ran wild, and then Miz and Alex Riley ran down for the distraction. Tarver rolled him up for the pin. And Bryan attacked Miz, gave him a tope, and then Tarver and Riley beat him up. Miz speared him into the barricade, gave him the skull-crushing finale on the briefcase, and then Alex Riley, of all people, called him an NXT wash-up, and they walked off. And then Miz
did dented the briefcase.
With his head, yes. Not good.
So now the briefcase has, marks on it.
Yeah. Then Miz did a promo saying the reason he did it was because from the moment Daniel Bryan arrived, everybody said that he should have been Daniel's rookie. The people had heckled him. How dare Team WWE choose Daniel Bryan over him? Said the new real next breakout star was going to be Riley. And then Riley called Daniel overrated and underdeveloped. So there you go. Darren Young.
He also called him a nerd.
A nerd, that's right. Well, Michael Cole been doing a lot of that as well.
Michael Cole was ripping on Daniel Bryan like fierce the whole match. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, plays into like what he was doing on NXT before, but it was kind of funny because, you know, he kept calling him a 10-year minor leaguer. And I was stunned because then Jerry Lawler said that he once wrestled in front of, you know, I mean, it's a different era, I guess, but he once wrestled in front of 50,000 people at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
And which I may be true, I'd have to look that up, but I mean, I know that he was on a Tokyo Dome show once, so he wrestled in front of a lot of people, you know, in Japan at one point. But it's just amazing that they would say that on WWE television.
I loved when he said that, and then Cole said, well, has he ever headlined WrestleMania? And Lawler pops right up and goes, well, few people do.
Yeah. I mean, Lawler never headlined WrestleMania. Lawler never wrestled at WrestleMania.
That's right. No wonder he's upset.
Yeah, that's probably why. I know, no kidding. So, I mean, he's a 30... by that standard, he's like a 35-year minor leaguer.
Afraid so. Darren Young offered to face Cena, said Cena had brutally attacked him last month, and so he wanted his redemption tonight. We had Gabriel in the ring for the match with Bret. The ding went off. I was sitting here thinking, how are they going to do this match? How are they going to work this? And as it turned out, the guest GM said, Bret will not be wrestling tonight because I don't like Bret Hart. I've never liked him, and I don't want to see him on Raw ever again. So,
I guess he's done. Is he done again?
He must be done again for the time being. And what a way to be written off.
Yeah, boy, was that weird.
Yeah. So he disappeared. And out came Randy Orton. We had a match that was largely just Randy Orton facials and didn't go long. Hit the draping DDT, set up the RKO. Same finish, two matches in a row. Sheamus came out for the distraction. Orton went after him. Gabriel won via countout. And then Orton got back in the ring, gave him the RKO, beat the crap out of Sheamus with a chair. And then as Sheamus was heading to the back, he saw Sheamus getting to his feet, so he rushed back there, gave him an RKO on the floor. You should have heard the reaction for that RKO. It was probably, it was one of the biggest pops they've gotten in a long time for a move. And he's getting up there towards that cusp again where he was before Shane McMahon screwed it all up.
Yeah, Orton was really over. But again, okay, so it gives him the RKO. How come Miz didn't come out then?
Miz is biding his time.
Yeah, he's getting it handed to him night after night, and he's, like, not taking advantage of it.
Maybe they actually have a storyline.
Coming out, and then, like, you know, they would do that thing where he was about to win, and then he would, like, not take... I mean, now he's not even coming out, and the guy's out there being laid out every night.
I presume that has to be part of the Miz storyline. I presume too much, I realize that, but...
I mean, he doesn't even acknowledge it. So if it's some storyline, they should at least tell us.
Yeah. Truth and Morrison against Sheffield and Otunga. So much for the singles matches. Presumably this would have meant that Sheffield and Otunga would both have been eliminated if they would have lost here. And Sheffield got a blind tag, hit Morrison with a big lariat, pinned him clean, and that was the end of that. So more jobs here for John Morrison. I guess we'll see where that goes. I figured he was turning at the show, but I was wrong. But still time down the road. We had there is an opening, actually, now in NXT. We had Jillian Hall pinning Eve in a tag match. It was Melina, Eve, and Gail against Maryse, Alicia, and Jillian. Jillian pinning Eve was surprising to me. And not much to the match. It was
set up a championship match next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, it lasted. Wait a second. It set up a championship match with Jillian pinning Eve?
Yeah. Jillian's getting a title shot at Melina on the second show.
So when she pinned Melina?
I think that they don't want to pin Melina so quick. Melina's like, you know, just came back.
All right. Josh interviewed Edge. Slater walked up, said that he'd pattern himself after Edge. Same hair, same good looks, etc. Said maybe Edge would forfeit the match. And Ed said, normally I would, but I do not want the record books to reflect that I lost to a windy-looking, ginger-haired wannabe. And so Slater punched him and ran off. That led to the match. It was also pretty basic. And Edge set up for the spear as they were outside the ring. And Slater sidestepped him into the ring, beating the count in the process. So Edge lost via count out. And then, of course, as with the Orton deal, he jumped in the ring and speared him to death afterwards to make sure that nobody got over. And that was that.
Well, even the other thing that I thought was really interesting was they wanted to make sure he didn't get over, because instead of it being like so smart that he heard the count that he jumped in to win, it was he was so afraid of the spear that he jumped in and just happened to be lucky and beat the count. And they made clear to say that, too.
Yeah.
You know, so that was quite... I mean, they really did make these guys come off like...
geeks.
Like, they are no threats in the main event anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Even with their hands raised in cases like this one.
Well, I think it was rather clear on this show that Sheffield and Barrett are the two they have their eyes on. One's tall, one's jacked to the gills, so they're going to get the chance.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I thought was, like, really stupid was when Michael Cole was making fun of Daniel Bryan's physique. I thought that on WWE television, making fun of a guy with a, you know, normal athletic physique is already stupid, but right now it's probably not the smartest thing to be doing.
Yeah. We had Ranjan and Kali backstage with one of the guys from the movie, and storyline is that Kali has a girlfriend, and that's why Kali has not done the kiss cam of late, and Kali had a picture of her, and as the guy's looking at it, the other guys walked in, and they saw the picture and started laughing at this girl, not knowing it was Kali's woman, and the big punchline was that Kali scared them off because he was so mad, and then he looked at the picture and nonchalantly said, "She's kind of ugly." And
ugly.
Yeah. Then the Bellas showed up and they skipped off together, and that was the end of that. Yeah. Or maybe not. And then finally, Cena and Darren Young. Nexus came out on the ramp to watch. A very basic match. Kind of about the level of an indie match, basically.
A little better.
Yeah. Did some moves.
A little better than an indie match.
Yeah. And finally, Darren went for a sunset flip. Cena turned it into STFU. Darren tapped out. And the NXT ran down. They surrounded the ring, but they left a side open, the side leading to the ramp. And Cena just calmly got out of the ring and walked away. And then the Nexus guys got in the ring. They surrounded Darren Young. They beat the hell out of him. Sheffield gave him the clothesline. Apparently right in the face, it looked like. Wade gave him the slam. Gabriel went up top and hit the 450. Probably the least stressful 450 of his entire WWE career, quite frankly. And that was the end of Darren Young. So I guess we'll see what that means next week. Actually, we have next week's tapings. So
yeah, I don't think he was there.
That's right. So maybe, I don't know if he's back in Florida. I don't know if he'll come back as a conquering babyface or maybe a failing babyface. But yeah, that was a Raw show. It was...
I think he may have been mailed in a box after the show.
That's right. That's right. Like the Spirit Squad.
They should just like have had a crate and dumped him in there and then, you know, send him to Tampa.
This poor guy.
Yeah.
Well, he needs more seasoning, as they say.
Oh, I loved when John Cena was making fun of him, that it basically implying, because Darren Young looks like him except he's black, that his mom got drunk and had an affair with Buckwheat.
Yeah.
But he didn't know how to say buckwheat, which I thought was hilarious. It's like, you know, the guy who wrote the material, which is undoubtedly Brian Gewirtz, probably knew who Buckwheat was, and John was like, he said the name all screwed up. Like he had no clue what he was saying, which I thought was kind of funny. He must not have watched like as much WWE as a kid as he said, because Jesse Ventura used to do the buckwheat thing like every single time Coco Ware wrestled. If you remember that the B stood for buckwheat.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was just a bad night for Cena.
Yeah.
He did great with everything else, apparently. All right, let's talk about these spoilers for next week. If you don't want to hear spoilers, now's your chance. Turn it off. You've been warned. This is for the August 23rd show. It opens with the GM saying Sheamus is watching the entire show, and he's going to choose the most impressive wrestler to get the title shot at the Night of the Champions show on September 19th in Chicago. We had Edge beating Truth and then saying he deserved a title shot. We had Jericho beating Kali. So 2 weeks of great matches for Chris Jericho here. And he said he should get the shot since he beat a giant. This sounds like one of those shows where like they had to do two Raws and they were all burnt out on creative. So this is just like,
well, not just two Raws, but they had a day to book SummerSlam.
And
two different SmackDowns. They had a lot of work this week.
So probably some very, very simple.
And two NXT shows, too.
Yep. Very simple booking for the next couple of weeks on all of these shows. We had Melina beating Jillian to keep the title. And they promised to, Lay Cool promised to confront Melina on the 900th episode of Raw from Boston, which actually is going to be, that's the Monday after UFC, right? Oh, wait, let me look at the
in
calendar.
Boston?
Let me look at the calendar here.
Yeah, it's the Monday after UFC in Boston.
Yep, how about that? So there you go. That'll be an interesting weekend.
Yeah.
So that was
right,
that.
Same arena, too.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah.
We had Miz doing an interview talking about how Cena made a mistake picking Daniel Bryan to be on his partner, to be his partner on the team instead of him. Next is interview. And Sheamus came out. GM said that the title ban on Nexus is now over, which actually makes sense since Bret Hart has been banished from the company. And Wade Barrett told Sheamus the truce with him was over as well, so he wanted the shot. Cena beat Miz via countout. When Miz tried to leave, Daniel Bryan threw him in the ring, and then Bryan attacked him, put him in a submission. Miz ended up being counted out, so Cena beat Miz. And that further builds up the Danielson versus Miz, probably U.S. title match at the pay-per-view. Kozlov and Santino beat the Usos. So the Tamina thing with Santino, I guess, continues. And the Usos have already been beaten, so I don't know what that means for their future, but doesn't really sound great. Orton beat Morrison and DiBiase in a three-way when he pinned Morrison. So that's a fourth straight job, actually, for John Morrison. And then hit DiBiase with the RKO afterwards. We had Josh interviewing Sheamus, asking about the Orton deal. And Sheamus said he already made his decision, and he was going to come out and announce it. And his announcement ended up being he would not defend the title at Night of Champions, but would do so here on this show instead, with his opponent being the top contender, Zack Ryder. I believe he beat Zach in 1 minute, I was told, and that was the end of that. And then Sheamus said that due to the rules, he now did not have to defend the title for 30 days. That's an antiquated rule we haven't heard about for a while. And then Barrett came out, said he was guaranteed a title shot, and then the mystery GM finally announced that he would get the shot, but it's going to be a six-pack challenge at the show with Jericho, Orton, Cena, and Edge involved as well. And everybody brawled to end the show, and Orton ended up laying out Cena with the RKO. So that is the tapings for next week. And only other note I heard was that at the beginning of the show when Sheamus came out, apparently he called some little girl fella, and everybody popped really big. So there you go. Something to look forward to on the program. Tell us a little bit about King Mo.
Oh, I talked to King Mo today. He's hilarious. He's fighting Rafael Feijão in the main event for Strike Force on Saturday night in Houston. And King Mo said that he is obsessive about whatever he gets into something, he just gets into him, and he just gets obsessed by it. He said when he was a kid, all he wanted to do was watch pro wrestling and be a professional wrestler. In fact, what he said, this is kind of interesting, is that I go, like, you interested in doing pro wrestling? He goes, I will do pro wrestling, okay? He says that he wants to be, he wanted to win an Olympic gold medal and then go into MMA and win a world championship in MMA and then go into pro wrestling because he'd be more marketable in pro wrestling with both of those. Well, he did not win an Olympic gold medal, and he already has won a championship, and he's Strikeforce light heavyweight champion right now. And he said that if WWE wants him, he will, in fact, be doing pro wrestling in a couple of years. Didn't say exactly when. He said, like, you know, he hopes that they don't think he's too old when he wants to start, but he also said that he's a very quick learner in everything that he does, so he would be very good. And just was chastising people in amateur wrestling and MMA who get mad at him for trying to be entertaining, saying that we're on television and you have to, you know.
You are television stars.
You're on television. You have to make yourself entertaining, or else, you know, he goes, like, if nobody did this, then MMA would be just like college wrestling. And he says he loves amateur wrestling. He was obsessed with amateur wrestling for a long time in his life as well. You know, he just talked about how, one day he heard about Kevin Jackson and David Schultz and Mark Schultz and, you know, John Smith and those kind of guys who were, like, the great amateur wrestlers of you know, before him. And he said he stole tapes from the Oklahoma library to make sure he studied them and studied them and studied them. And he ended up being, I mean, he was a national champion wrestler. Not in college. I think he took second at his best. But, I mean, he won, the senior nationals, which is actually much, because of the competition, it's actually much tougher than the NCAAs anyway. And, I lost in the Olympic trials, so he, in 88, or in 08, I should say, and that at that point he knew he was going into MMA, and said that he always wanted to do MMA in Japan because when he started watching his MMA tapes, all the good matches were in Pride, and he saw those big crowds, and so he wanted to go there. And, just on and on about Chael Sonnen did the absolute greatest job of anyone in history that he has ever seen his entire life, and that includes his hero, the Nature Boy Ric Flair. We started discussing it one day in Tulsa. He met Ric Flair, and that was like the highlight of his life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he get to go out and party with Ric Flair, or did you just meet him?
He just met him. He didn't go out and party with him. He wishes he partied with him. His other favorite, he liked Booker T., his other real favorite is Arn Anderson, because Arn Anderson was so underrated and so technically good in the ring, and I just thought this was very interesting listening to him. But he liked wrestling when wrestling was good, and he didn't like WWF until some of his favorites went to WWF and they started watching it. But he liked Mid-South wrestling tapes. He actually grew up in Tennessee and Kentucky, which was not Mid-South wrestling territory, but he loved watching Mid-South wrestling, and he loved watching Jim Crockett Promotions. So that was his favorite stuff, and he's a big fan of the Great Muta. That was the other name that he mentioned to me. And but he knew every wrestler from that era. You know, he's explained to me, which is kind of hilarious, about how, you know, that Bill Goldberg's push was really just, you know, a cross between Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA, which in fact is what it was. But I just thought it was very funny him telling me that.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
Well, hopefully he'll be on the show one of these days to talk about this.
Yeah, he will. Oh, and
get a lot of heat on various sites.
Yeah, we were talking. The other thing is this is a good one too. So we're talking about Gegard Mousasi, who, you know, he won the championship from in May in St. Louis, and he said that he was getting into fights on Twitter with people who were telling him that Mousasi was going to beat him, that Mousasi was too experienced for him, and he said, no, I'm going to beat Mousasi because I was taking down Olympic champions and world champions in wrestling, and they couldn't stop my takedown. So nobody in MMA, including this guy, is going to stop my takedown, so I'm going to take him down. And he said that Mousasi gouged his eye. But remember how he had that big swelling on his eyes to the point where it was almost going to be stopped even though he was winning the fight?
Yeah,
he said he was never punched. He said he was gouged. Like, in the first minute, the guy gouged his eyes.
Wow.
Dirty fighter. But but anyway, so he was saying that, like, when he told those people who were insulting him about how Musashi was going to beat him, he said, not only am I going to beat Musashi, but when I beat him, everyone's on the internet is going to go, oh, Musashi, he was overrated anyway. It just cracked me up when he said that, because that's exactly what everyone said.
He knows his stuff.
Yes, he was predicting the future there. So that was, you know, that. That was the main stuff. It was an interesting conversation.
Heyman did his big interview with Ariel Helwani today, and we're going to have Ariel on the show, by the way, prior to UFC in Boston, so everybody can look forward to that. And apparently one of the tales he told was that prior to UFC going on Spike, as everybody recalls, Vince McMahon had the right to ixnay it, and Vince did not. And Paul is now saying that he told Vince he should have ixnayed it. And have you heard this tale before?
No, that's what I thought was amazing, because think about this. This would have been 2004, and how would I have never have heard? I never heard that story before.
Yeah.
So anyway,
just interesting, everyone.
Yes, he said. Not only did he tell him to that it was not a good idea, but they will reach into your pocket and steal all of your pay-per-view money if you let them on the air.
Well, pay-per-view is a dying business, according to Dixie.
Yeah, WWE would be saying the same thing, except they can't.
Yeah. Let's jump into the mailbag here. We've got a million questions. This person here says, about Bob Backlund's proposed heel turn in 84, would Vince have gone all the way with it? Where would he have been on the card at the first WrestleMania, or was it just a ploy by Vince to discredit Backlund?
You know, it's really hard to tell all those years back. You know, I think Vince kind of wanted him out, but I think that just because Backlund had credibility in a lot of the cities from, you know, 6 years as champion, my feeling is if Backlund would have turned heel, that he would have gone to a Hogan-Backlund feud. You know, Backlund probably, you know, I mean, Hogan's going to win all the matches, but Backlund, yeah, you know, I mean, if this was in August of 84-ish, I think it was the summer of 84 when this went down, Mania was in March of 85. You know, at the time, I don't even think that he even had the idea of Mania. He probably had sort of an idea, but you know, it wasn't really formulated. So as far as, like, where he would be, I don't know, but if he did well as a heel and embraced it and got over, yeah, he probably would have had it. You know, he wouldn't have been in the main event at Mania. You know, I mean, no way. But he would have probably been. He probably would have had a solid spot on the card, or could have anyway.
This person says, "What was the Beverly Brothers gimmick supposed to be? I couldn't tell if they were gay and or spoiled, and why were they billed from Shaker Heights, Ohio? I hope they weren't gay. They were brothers." Very edgy.
They wanted people to chant like stuff like that at them. I mean, that was part of the gimmick.
Yep.
So yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like, you know, it was to inspire those chants. So I don't know if you're saying that, you know, but that's what they wanted people, the conclusion people to come to. Yeah. So, and Rich also.
Yeah. The person was wondering two things. First being the infamous Takeda versus Coleman fight from Pride. Exactly how much was paid to Coleman to drop the fight, and what is the story behind it?
I don't know exactly how much he got paid to do it. As far as the story behind it was that, Pride, you know, Pride was put together as a Japanese organization for, you know, which would have both worked and shoot matches, and would be, you know, basically an extension of UWFI, which was a promotion that years earlier had been very popular, and it was to do a Hicks and Gracie and Takada, which was a fight that, for a number of reasons, there was a lot of interest in Japan in, because Hicks and Gracie beat the hell out of Yoji Anjo, who was one of the guys in Takada's promotion in the UWFI. When Yoji Anjo, what happened was Yoji Anjo had heard all of this stuff, and Hoyce Gracie had already made a big rep in the United States winning the UFC, but Hicks and Gracie was, by legend, the toughest guy in the Gracie family, and Yoji figured, since, you know, he's a bigger guy than Hicks and Gracie, that, and he was a shooter himself, too, that he'd go there. And I don't know what he was thinking, but he went there with a camera crew and all these people.
He wasn't thinking.
What?
He wasn't thinking.
Yeah, he went to his gym, started, you know, calling out Hickson. Hickson wasn't there when he went, but he didn't know that. Hickson, it was like on a morning one day. I remember this story because one of the guys in the Hickson in the Yoji Anjo entourage. I'll tell you this after this. But anyway, he goes in there and he he's causing a scene at Hickson's gym, and then they call up Hickson and say there's some Japanese guy, and Hickson has no idea who this guy is. There's some big Japanese guy. And Yoichi's not really that big, but they told him, this big Japanese guy's here, and he's causing a scene, and he wants to fight you. So Hickson was sleeping. It was the morning. Gets up, tapes up his fists, comes to the gym, tells the cameramen and everyone, you're going to have to get out of the gym, and made them leave the gym. And then the Japanese cameraman, he probably filmed it himself. And then he, like, beat the shit out of Yoichi Anjo, messed his face up so bad, he massacred this guy. Because of what happened, the story ended up becoming, like, huge in Japan. And they figured that since, you know, Yoichi Anjo was one of these guys that a new, you know, heel would come in and beat to lead to a match with Takada, and Takada would always avenge the loss, that Takada should fight Hickson, and then Takada never did fight Hickson.
Poor Takada.
Yeah, until 2000, or 1997, they finally did the fight, and that was the original Pride. It was supposed to be a one-off thing for the Takada-Hickson, and it turned into a, you know, a promotion, and the draw was Takada, and Takada had lost some fights. He'd won, I think he may have won, like, a worked fight, and then he may have lost, like, a one or two shoots. I don't remember. You'll have to look up, like, who he beat and everything. I know he lost, like, Igor Bobchanchin and Mark Kerr, but the feeling was is that business was going really down and the promotion was about to go out of business. And the only way to save it was that Takada needed to win over somebody who was really good. So they called Mark Coleman, and Mark Coleman was the guy, and Takada beat him with the heel hook. And that was the basic gist of the background of that story. And then Pride survived and ended up, you know, years later, you know, setting the standard for MMA. And it's kind of funny because there's a lot of, you know, weird things. I mean, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that Takada won a couple of those worked fights, actually, I think it was only two. I think it was Kyle Sturgeon and Coleman. But, and Alexander Otsuka, too. But if Takada hadn't won those worked fights because he couldn't beat anyone in a shoot, that, you know, Pride never would have lasted until the Sakuraba run, and the history of MMA would be completely different. So it's kind of like working fights led to the, you know, or at least saved the company, which led to, you know, the glory period of MMA in Japan. That, you know, if it wasn't for worked fights, that probably wouldn't exist. Well, it wouldn't exist because if it wasn't for worked fights, there'd be no Takada, and there'd have been no Pride without Takada.
Now, what was the story about the guy and his entourage?
So anyway, this happens some morning. One of the guys in the entourage was Jimmy Suzuki, who's a pro wrestling photographer. So he, like, you know, really, like, just a couple minutes after it happens, he calls me up. You'll never believe this story. He's telling me this story about it. And he was actually kicked out of the gym, but he's watching and he's taking pictures through the window of Anjo just getting destroyed. He's going like, this was a shoot. Oh, my God. He just beat the shit out of him. And it's like he mounted him and he did this and he did that. And it was just, his face looks like so bad. If you ever saw the pictures, man, you know, Yoichi Anjo has one of those great faces like Takayama where it just bruises so great, so it looks even worse than it really is. And he really did get beat up anyway. And God, did his face look horrible. And it made for some graphic-looking stuff anyway. But the UWFI lost face. I mean, you know, a lot of people credit that incident and the fact that Takada and Hickson never fought in UWFI for one of the reasons why UWFI lost its popularity, because UWFI was a super over promotion. And, you know, like, everyone expected this to lead to Takada and Hickson, and never happened in that promotion. And they made, you know, offers to Hickson, but Hickson wouldn't, you know. The problem with the Hickson thing is Hickson wouldn't do a worked match with Takada. So it took years, and, you know, the only reason that Takada and Hickson did the shoot match was because Takada, you know, pretty much at that point, you know, his pro wrestling, I don't want to say his career was over, but his glory days were over. You know, like, he'd had his dream matches. There was, like, nothing left for him in pro wrestling where he could make, you know, big, big money. And this was a big money fight. So it was just sort of like he was basically forced into it. And Takada did not want to do the Hickson. The first one, I think he was scared out of his mind. The second one, because he'd survived the first one with minimal damage, you know, he lost, but, you know, he lived. He didn't seem nearly as scared the second time. You know, I think he went in there knowing he was going to lose, but he realized that, you know, he wasn't going to die. The first one, you could just see that he just, you know, I mean, he just thought it was going to be the end of his life. Plus, he had that rep as a shooter, you know, from UWFI, from pro wrestling. I think he was really afraid that, like, you know, that his whole rep would be exposed, which it ended up being. But that's another story.
Well, that's quite the exciting tale right there. All right, let's see what else we've got right here. This person says, altercations between Melina and Lay Cool and between Kane and Sheamus. Maybe the seeds for angles are being built for Night of the Champions, bragging rights or both. The champion versus champion feud seems obvious, but I get the impression they are teasing the unification of some, if not all, the championships, especially now that they've officially unified the tag titles into one set of belts. What do you think?
I don't see them unifying the women's titles or the singles titles. I mean, they made the women's, but I don't think so. But the main singles title, I just don't see that them unifying that at all. Don't see it happen.
I think they should. I mean,
you could do it and then have the guy do both shows, but I just think that they would, you know.
I don't think they're going to do it, but I think that would be so great in the sense that you have one champion that goes from show to show, and he's your top guy, and immediately the title means twice as much as it did before. And,
agreed. Yeah. But I just remember when they unified the last time, which would have been with Brock Lesnar, that as soon as they did it, well, I mean, I guess they had the unified thing with Jericho, and then ended up with Lesnar. But I mean, the minute they unified it, all the writers could think of is how they could put it back to, you know, split it back into two titles. I mean, it's like they didn't even, you know, it was just not something that they thought that they could do. You know, is have two different brands with one champion.
And finally here, I notice it seems every time Brett got in the ring over the last few weeks during the Nexus angle, he paired off with Heath Slater, not only in the SummerSlam match, but in the brawls on Raw as well. Was there a reason behind this? Did Slater get the assignment to work with Brett for any particular reason, or did Brett pick him? It's from Matt.
I don't know the answer. I figure probably that was the guy who either management or I figure it was probably management just felt that he was the most comfortable and most professional of those guys as far as being able to work with Brett's limitations.
He did sell awesome for him on Sunday night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Really did, yeah.
He was really great. So anyway, everybody, that is it for today. We're going to be back on Wednesday night with a brand new show. If you didn't check it out earlier this weekend, we had the breaking audio on Friday night, which unfortunately with breaking audio, it's not always the best thing. But SummerSlam on Sunday night as well, we recapped all of the news on the show and actually a bunch of big stories last night. So make sure you check that one out. And got a new issue of Figure Four coming up later on tonight. New issue of The Observer up tomorrow. A lot of big things coming up, so check it out. And we'll talk to you again after a while.